Chapter 14. Removing the Unimportant. Takeaway. The word no is a powerful tool in your productivity toolkit. While time is no longer money in the knowledge economy, money can buy you time when you spend it intelligently. For every low-impact task, project, and commitment you say no to, you say yes to working on your most valuable tasks. By eliminating and shrinking what I could, including coaching people and businesses, emailing, attending meetings, following social media, and accepting speaking gigs, I freed up a ton of time and attention to focus on bigger things. But as usual, I still wasn't satisfied. I still had a number of pesky, low-return tasks that needed to get done that I couldn't seem to shake off. Those included managing my calendar, arranging conference calls with multiple people, loading blog articles and newsletters, researching and scheduling travel, and doing website maintenance. These tasks all took a good amount of time and attention, and that was time taken away from what I figured were more vital or meaningful tasks. Thankfully, since we all deliver limited value through our low-impact tasks, we also don't bring anything unique to them. These tasks are prime candidates to be delegated to other people, and that's the third and final way to handle the lowest return tasks in your work. Delegating tasks admittedly isn't a realistic option for everyone, but it's a lot more accessible than you might think. What's your time worth? One of the most illuminating calculations you can make is how much your time is worth to you. Not just in general, but in precise dollars and cents. This is a calculation I've made periodically over the last few years whenever my life conditions have changed. The way I calculate it usually requires a bit of thought, but it's quite simple. Every so often I ask myself, how much would I be willing to pay in order to buy back 1 hour of my life? When I was a student and made almost no money, I was willing to pay very little. Since I had hardly any money to buy back my time with, I didn't have the financial freedom to hire people to do work for me. Back then, I figured my time was worth about $5 an hour. Because of this, I filed my own taxes and was willing to work for minimum wage because my time wasn't worth any more than that. At the beginning of the year of my productivity project, I was willing to buy back an hour of my life for about $10. Toward the end of my project, though, my time began to be worth significantly more, about $50 an hour. By then, I had established a small business that began to earn a sustainable income, and I began thinking about building up a team to whom I could delegate my lowest return tasks. Depending on how you value your time, it's possible to delegate tasks in your home as well. Tasks like mowing your lawn, shoveling snow, or cleaning your house are tasks that are relatively easy to delegate and will let you buy back hours of your life, or just teach your kids to do them. Like with most of the tactics in this book, buying back time isn't about doing less. It's about working smarter to do more of the things you find meaningful. I found that the value of my time has orbited around four things. One, how much money I earn. Two, how valuable my time is to me. Three, how valuable money is to me. And four, how overwhelmed I feel. I think if you're considering hiring an assistant, a virtual assistant, who's a part-time assistant who will work for you remotely, an intern, or a team, calculating the value of your time is essential. You may find that you don't value your time that much, and that you should work on your lowest impact tasks yourself. Or perhaps you'll see the value in getting someone else to do your low-return tasks for you. Regardless of where you stand, calculating the value of your time is worth the effort. My first assistant. As an experiment, toward the end of my project, I hired a virtual assistant. On the surface, the experiment was perfect. By delegating the low-impact tasks I had remaining, I would be able to hit several birds with one stone. At once, I'd be able to eliminate my remaining low-return tasks by delegating them to someone else and free up valuable time and attention to spend on more important things. Not everyone has the freedom to hire an assistant, but when I looked at the rates of virtual assistants, I began to get pretty excited. I would be able to delegate my low-impact tasks to whomever I chose, as well as any low-impact tasks that came in over the course of the week, and the average hourly rate for the assistants I considered hiring was about $5 to $10 an hour, way below the $50 an hour I valued my time at. Some folks charged way more, of course, but those people I ignored. But my first virtual assistant was absolutely terrible. Not to throw her too far under the bus, but before I hired her, I didn't do enough due diligence. Not only was she located in India, which made communicating across time zones difficult, she was unreliable, took forever to learn new tasks, and I'm pretty sure she relied heavily on Google Translate to speak English. Since most of the tasks I gave her were digital, the time zone issue didn't matter all that much. But because she didn't speak English well, and took so long to train even for the smallest tasks, I would have saved time and attention if I had simply done the work myself. My second assistant. Thankfully, a few months later, after working with a couple of other VAs on and off, Louise came along. When I gave a TEDx talk about my productivity project, Louise Jorgensen, a VA from Denmark, fortuitously stumbled upon my talk and decided to write a blog post about it. After I stumbled upon what she had written, it didn't take me long to ask if she had time to help me out. In a way, her blog post had carved out a desire path that led her directly to my project. As I quickly discovered, Louise was the opposite of my other inexpensive virtual assistants in pretty much every way. She was wicked smart, able to quickly learn pretty much anything, and had a ton of experience both with the kind of tasks that I sent her way and with productivity in general. She's still working for me today while she studies in Thailand. At first, I hired Louise simply to arrange calls and load up blog posts and email newsletters. But I soon also began to delegate other low-return tasks to her, like managing my calendar, booking appointments, researching and booking trips, and even doing website maintenance or hiring and managing other contractors to do that maintenance. I paid her $25 US an hour, substantially more than my first assistant, but she was easily worth it. It felt great to work on a project all day, hand it off to her in the evening, and have her work on it while I slept so I could be further ahead the next morning. Over the course of a month or so, as I began to trust Louise with more and more low-return tasks, I began to cross items off my to-do list and was able to free up more time and attention for bigger and better things. I'd finally discovered the benefits I'd hoped for with my first assistant. Here are the advantages of hiring a VA. In Louise's own words, quote, "It frees up time so you can focus on the activities that are at the core of your business and so that you can keep developing your business," she says. Quote, "The more a business grows, the more tasks there are on the to-do list, so it is very helpful to delegate some of the time-consuming tasks to a VA. I found myself having more time to write, do research, read more books, and interview interesting people. My highest return and most meaningful tasks. I also began to have much more attentional space to think deeply about my highest return tasks and do a much better job of them. Is hiring a VA for everyone? And what do you look for? Again, Louise has some sage advice. Quote, "First, you should know what kind of skills you're looking for. Do you mainly need someone to take care of your administrative tasks? Or do you need someone who can take care of your correspondence with, say, clients or colleagues? By knowing the tasks you need taken care of, you can look for someone who has matching skills. I also think it's more fruitful, easier, and enjoyable if you find someone that you can personally connect with. This is why I always talk with a potential client beforehand to see if our working styles match. That way, in the end, everyone is happier." Mistakes you shouldn't make. Even though I had to learn several lessons the hard way, I discovered a few important things that are worth keeping in mind if you decide to hire an assistant, a virtual assistant, an intern, or a team. Don't be afraid to pay a bit more for someone who's much more qualified. The less skilled someone is, the more time and attention you'll spend training and interfacing with the person on a daily basis, and that's a cost you should not overlook. For this reason, I recommend paying a bit more for someone more qualified if you can. For example, expect a good virtual assistant to run you between $15 and $30 US an hour. Hiring someone in a different time zone can often be a good thing. Depending on the nature of your work and the type of tasks you intend to delegate, hiring someone in a different time zone can actually be advantageous for your work. For example, I have Louise load up a lot of blog articles and email newsletters, and because she's located overseas, I can finish a post in the evening, have her load it up overnight, and have it sent out for my review first thing in the morning. If you're hiring outside of your time zone, make sure whoever you're hiring is skilled and that the person is someone you can trust implicitly. Always check references. Good virtual assistants will usually have references from people who are happy with their work. Don't be afraid to check someone's references. It can save you a ton of time in the end. If you're not in the market for someone to support your work, consider outsourcing your work on a per-task basis when you have the flexibility or budget to do so. Here are a few great websites I've discovered over the last few years, and a couple that friends of mine have recommended, whether you're looking for someone to work with you on a constant basis or on a per-task basis. I don't have an affiliation with any of these, and have used them all. FancyHands.com for hiring virtual assistants. Zirtual, Zirtual.com for hiring virtual assistants. EAHelp.com for hiring virtual assistants. Freelancer.com for per-task hiring. Upwork.com for per-task hiring. Job postings at local colleges and universities to hire an intern. Help wanted posts on Craigslist and Twitter for assistance. If you're in search of someone great to help you out, whether for specific tasks or on an ongoing basis, the preceding are some reputable websites that can give you the help you need. The most productive word in your vocabulary. The most productive word in your vocabulary is one of the first words you learned as a toddler. It is also the 56th most common word in the English language. No. When I realized I had bitten off more than I could chew as my project began to find its legs, I made a habit of deliberately saying no to low return things every day. To me, it didn't matter whether they were large tasks or small things like listening to a podcast I wasn't interested in, responding to a mean email message, or reading the comment section on a news website. Making an effort to say no to things that weren't valuable, instead of accepting whatever came my way, saved me a great deal of time. While it's one thing to eliminate, shrink, and delegate the tasks and commitments you already have, the number of tasks and commitments you take on is not static. It fluctuates over time. If you don't continually defend your time and attention against low-return tasks, projects, and commitments, your life can easily become flooded with low-return activities. When Greg McKeown published his fantastic book Essentialism in 2014, a book about deliberately doing less, it struck a chord. When I asked Greg about what it was in his book that connected with so many people, he put it simply, "Everybody is in pain." He continued, quote, "People feel stretched too thin at work and at home. People feel busy but not productive. People feel constantly distracted and tripped by the trivial," end quote. Constantly trying to do more things instead of the right things leads to more stress, poorer quality of work, and lower productivity. The answer to this is to focus on the most essential tasks in your work and life. Perhaps my favorite rule that Greg talks about for eliminating and saying no to tasks, Greg calls these types of tasks non-essential, is his 90% rule. He argues that we shouldn't just eliminate and say no to tasks that are pointless. We should also eliminate many of the pretty good tasks in our life and work when we can, because they take valuable time away from our most essential tasks. The 90% rule is simple. When you look at a new opportunity, rank it on a scale of 1 to 100 on how valuable or meaningful you think it is. If it isn't a 90 or above, don't do it. As Greg put it, quote, "Your job isn't stuffing it all in, siphoning your energy into lots of good things. Your energy is best spent on the greatest things," end quote. Your energy is for working on what's important and most essential. For every low-impact task, project, and commitment you say no to, you can say yes to working on your most valuable tasks. This is, by the way, another great reason to work more deliberately instead of faster and harder. By working slower, you work with more awareness and mindfulness, and it's much easier to reflect on the return of the things that come your way. In a similar way, the commitments and obligations you keep should be where your most important tasks and projects stem from. Every commitment you make in your work and home life takes up some amount of time and attention, and each makes you less productive when it isn't high impact or meaningful to you. Take owning a home, for example. I'm lucky that at age 26, I can contemplate owning a home if I want to. But a few years ago, I made the decision not to. It's not that I don't eventually want to own a house. I absolutely love the idea of owning a home, having a yard to barbecue in, and having my own space. But like with waking up at 5:30 every morning, the idea simply isn't worth the amount of time it would take in practice at this point in my life. In an apartment or condo, I don't have to mow the lawn, take out the trash, shovel snow, or even repair my appliances when they break. Owning a home isn't a commitment I care enough about to sacrifice the time I can now spend on better things. Examining the commitments you take on and reflecting on their return will let you simplify your work in life and free up even more of your time and attentional space for commitments that are the most important to you. These commitments include things like the following: full and part-time jobs, industry associations you're a member of, owning and maintaining a home or a second home, educational commitments, for example, attending university or college or taking courses part-time, relationships and friendships, clubs you're involved with, and skills or hobbies you actively spend time on. I think a particularly powerful way to identify your commitments and obligations is to look at your low-impact tasks and then think about which commitments they belong to. Every task or project you have stems from a larger commitment. By actively thinking about what commitments every task or project is affiliated with, you can identify the highest and lowest return commitments in your life relatively easily. Not every low-return task or project is part of a low-return commitment, but many of them will be. I believe that one of the biggest reasons my productivity project began to find its legs was that I minimized how many other commitments I was involved with during that same time. When I started AYOP, I cut back on the number of commitments I took on and quit my part-time job and declined other job offers. I even permanently deleted my Facebook account to free up time and attention for my project, which produced more benefits and was more meaningful to me. While it may sound on the surface like my life was less rich because I eliminated these commitments, the opposite was the case. To me, my project was a much more meaningful and high-impact way to spend my time, and cutting down on the number of commitments I took on let me dive into it that much deeper. Yo-Yo Ma didn't become the greatest cellist in the world by juggling cello lessons with soccer practice, salsa classes, and a couple of part-time jobs. He became a great cellist by investing as much of his time and attention into practicing the cello as he could, and it shows. Similarly, one of the most productive and successful companies in the world is Apple. While other companies collect new product lineups like their Pokemon cards, Apple has a laser-like focus that has made it the most valuable company on the planet. The company has just four main product lines: the iPhone, iPad, Mac, and Apple Watch, and each line is just a few products deep and is updated only about once a year. At the time of writing, Apple is the world's largest company by market capitalization, yet every product the company makes would fit on a small table. Saying no is what got Apple there. When you look around, you can find countless examples of how simplifying your commitments can make you more focused and productive. By doing this, you're able to better spend your time, attention, and energy on the select commitments that yield the most, are the most meaningful to you, and create more time and attentional space for those valuable commitments. The most productive people take the time to not only understand what's important, but also to simplify everything else. The delegation challenge. Time required, 10 minutes. Energy and focus required, 8.5 out of 10. Value, 7 out of 10. Fun, 8.5 out of 10. Wow. What you'll get out of it. a deeper understanding of exactly how much your time is worth, which will tell you your tolerance for delegating and outsourcing tasks in your work and home life. My challenge for you in this chapter is to calculate the value of your time. Think deeply about how much you would pay to buy back an hour of your life, considering your income, how busy you are, and how valuable you find time and money to be, and then look at the cost of hiring someone to help you, a good assistant, a virtual assistant, an intern, or professional help in another area of your life. It could be the most productive calculation you'll ever make. And if you're looking to up your game even more, I challenge you to also, 1, consciously make an effort to say no to 5 things tomorrow, regardless of how large or small they are. And 2, think about the commitments and obligations involving your lowest return tasks and ask how much value they add to your life. Should you consider eliminating some? Of the 3 essential ingredients of productivity, your time is the most limited of them. It is worth spending as intelligently as possible.